welcome to the PureMed Podcast special series, Behind Diagnoses Patients. My name is Leah Sarapier, and I am your host. Behind Diagnoses Patients aims to uplift patient voices, to share their insight and experiences navigating the healthcare system. It welcomes everyone from patient advocates, the chronically ill, disabled, and those with rare diseases to offer suggestions for a more equitable world. On this episode, I'm pleased to welcome Morgan Lewis, also known as Morg. As a Chicago native and now New Jersey resident for 20 plus years, a terrible singer and mother to two amazing children, she currently works as an administrative assistant with a degree in applied sciences and massage therapy from the Swedish Institute in New York that was received in 2009. Everything changed when she received a diagnosis that changed her life. Today, Morgan, we are here for you to tell your story in a way that communicates the good and the bad of our healthcare system, your concerns and suggestions for a more equitable world. So I'd like for you to take it away and tell us about yourself, your story, and what inspired you to become a powerful patient advocate.
Thank you, Leah. Thank you for inviting me to this platform. It's amazing to be here. My name is Morgan Lewis. I live in New Jersey. I am a hydrocephalus patient. I was diagnosed in 2019. For those that aren't familiar, because hydrocephalus is not a common illness, it is an illness where cerebral spinal fluid collects around the brain. It normally it's supposed to collect but drain normally. And with hydrocephalus, which is also called pseudotumor cerebri, it can collect and put pressure on the brain. It's called pseudotumor because it can mimic a brain tumor. In 2019, I was working and I felt flu-like symptoms coming on. I had a fever, I had a really bad headache, and it got to the point where I couldn't turn my head anymore. And luckily, my boss at the time told me, I think it's time for you to go to the ER. And at that point, I went to the ER, and the first diagnosis that came to mind from the physician was, oh, meningitis. So I had to have emergency spinal tap, where they measured the spinal fluid, but also to check if there was any infection. Thankfully, there was no infection, but the normal pressure, I believe, is between 18 and 20. I was at a 47. So I was double the pressure of spinal fluid around my brain. And that's when they gave me the diagnosis of pseudotumor cerebral hydrocephalus, or intracranial hypertension. As you can imagine, hearing something with the word tumor in the context, I immediately was panicked, and that's when they explained to me, no, there is no cancer there, but the symptoms that you're feeling mirror that of a brain tumor. On top of not feeling well, I had gone through years of having these seizures time to time. I'm a mom of two, and after my son in 2008, when I would get headaches, these migraines were just debilitating. And then in 2019, I started developing really, really severe depression, and I couldn't explain why. And after going to therapy and seeing numerous doctors and finally getting the diagnosis, I just felt this weight lifted off my shoulders because now I have an answer. Now I can get the help that I need. Unfortunately, with this illness, there's still a lot of research and, you know, kind of the guessing game going on. The first thing that was thrown at me was, well, you're overweight, and that can be the cause of this. And after doing more research and joining different groups on Facebook, or even I had a couple of meetings with the Hydrocephalus Foundation, it's not the cause. it does, being overweight does not help, but that is not the cause. Because I would, it's very common with children. It's common with women specifically in childbearing ages. So any weight, color, class, it didn't matter. And even men had the same illness, it just didn't matter. So I was very upset that the first thing thrown at me was, you're overweight. You gotta lose the weight and then it'll take care of everything. And then I found out after meeting with neurosurgeons and an ophthalmologist, who was an optometrist, but specifically gears towards the brain and how it affects everything. My ventricles in my brain are severely narrow. So the spinal fluid could not drain properly because of the ventricles being so narrow. Hydrocephalus is very common in infants and children. So it's something that you can be born with. It's something that people can live with all their life and never know. However, it can be often misdiagnosed. There's patients who have been diagnosed as having dementia and Alzheimer's, but actually it's hydrocephalus because the pressure has built up so much, it starts to affect everything. After meeting with so many people in groups and foundations, there's not a lot of people of color who are either diagnosed or even know that they have it, because they're often written off as having, you're overweight, you're stressed, you're tired, and then they're often dismissed. I remember before my diagnosis in 2019, I had the worst migraine. It was making me vomit, everything. And I went to the ER and they just gave me a Tylenol. They gave me extra strength Tylenol and sent me home. They didn't even do a scan that day. They just sent me home. And the depression was just adding up. And then even now the depression of, oh my God, I just really need to lose this weight. Maybe I'll feel better. But with this condition, activity at times can be completely debilitating. Going up a flight of stairs, you will hear the throbbing in your head, the pounding headache. So asking someone to do these exercises or whatever goes into a healthy regime was just not working. At that point, I did meet with a neurologist and a neurosurgeon who saw my scans and confirmed this is the issue. So what they did is I went and had a brain surgery in October of 2020, where they put a device called a shunt into my skull. I probably still see it here. And the shunt is a device where one catheter goes into the ventricle of the brain and the other catheter goes under the skin. And you can either have a VP shunt, which the other catheter drains into the abdomen, or the other shunt, or the other tube can drain into your heart. I have a VP shunt. Even after receiving that surgery, I felt some relief, but I still was having complications. I started having seizures. Memory loss was, I was just completely out of it for a while. The recovery was a very hard process, and even worse, I felt I wasn't being listened to. I would call and say, you know, I'm having these seizures, or I'm having these like flashes of light when I look around, or the memory is short, or I'm just not feeling well. I'm starting to have these headaches again. I'm starting to just not feel good. And then they did what they call a shunt series, which is when they put, it's almost like a CAT scan almost. They put the dye through the shunt to see if there's any distortion through the how it's draining. And they said it came back normal. But even when doing the test, they realized it was draining very slow. But they wouldn't even take it a step further to see, maybe we need to dive deeper into this and see what the issue is. I had complained about abdominal pain. I said, I believe that the catheter that's in my abdomen is too long. And after reading and doing my own research, I began asking more questions. And I felt the more questions I asked, the more dismissed I became. I asked questions as to why is the catheter in my abdomen the same length as it would be for an infant child? If I'm a full grown adult, I'm not growing with this device anymore as a child would, so it doesn't need to be as long. After doing testing, turned out the catheter was too long and I had to go back into surgery in January 2021. And then that was shortened, and then towards around my birthday, which is in May, I just really was not feeling well anymore. I told the neurologist I was not feeling well anymore. And to him, everything came back normal. So we'll see you in a couple months. Just keep us posted. And luckily with the group I met online and a couple of people I met online and forums, they referred me to Johns Hopkins, which actually has a hydrocephalus team. And I met with Dr. Luciano, who was the director of the team. And in my first consultation with him, he just, he's like, it's not working. I can just, by talking to you and listening to you, it's not working. And we scheduled another surgery. So I had another brain surgery in July 2021, last month. And when he did the surgery, he said the valve was completely blocked. It wasn't draining anything. It was even a little embedded. So we had to remove that, put a whole new valve in. And I just remember, I just started crying because I knew that something was wrong. I knew something, I just was not feeling right. Something is not working. And thankfully, I found a physician who listened to me, but also was able to correct the problem. Now, and he was very honest after the surgery. He said, you know, you could be back in 6 years to fix this. You could be back in 6 months. We don't have a clear-cut cure for this illness as of yet. We just have solutions to alleviate some of the pain. But even then, I just knew there was not enough representation behind this illness. Even just with the funding behind it, it's not enough research with it. I guess because the can range from children to men to women. I've even been online and I've seen animals that have it. it's so broad of a diagnosis. It's hard to find a cure. But I just know, especially being a woman of color, I felt that my questions and upset was dismissed often. And it was always just thrown out. Oh, you need to lose weight. Oh, you need to do this. You need to do that. Instead of, let's sit and talk and really understand this. I didn't even realize until I went for my checkup with my GYN that if you have hydrocephalus, you shouldn't be on birth control. No one told me that. No one's ever told me that. And I said, could that be a reason why women in childbearing ages have higher cases of this? Because most women in childbearing ages are on birth control. So I've been on birth control for years. And this is the first time I had to get off of it and really just completely regulate my system all over again. And that was something no one ever mentioned. It wasn't until I saw my GYN or I saw my optometrist or whatever that there's certain meds you can't take. I just found out last week that if you're on the diuretic they put you on for hydrocephalus, you can't take Pepto-Bismol because they counteract with each other and you can have hallucinations. You can go into a coma. It's like, these are things that people aren't talking about because I feel like they're afraid to admit they don't understand it yet. So instead of saying we don't understand, they just become dismissive. So that's why I believe the programs such as yours and just having advocacy, period, is so important, because once you get the voices and people behind it, I feel it will push for more research and more people coming forward and getting the proper care and diagnosis that they need.
Absolutely, Morgan. I really applaud you with what you've gone through and how you had that gut instinct. And if only providers actually listened to you when you told them, things would be very different. And it's extremely outrageous that it took them so long to finally come to a diagnosis. 2019 is quite recent. But now I'll ask you a few questions, Morgan.
Yeah.
So now the first question I have for you is, what matters to you when interacting with health professionals and undergoing invasive exams?
Just being open to any and every question. Not every patient has access to doing research or can clearly wrap their heads around what is happening. So being patient and open to questions and making sure that the patient has a clear understanding as to what is happening and being that and offering that emotional support. One of the hardest parts of recovery that they do not talk about is the emotional aspect that comes with it, the depression that can come with it. You have to learn yourself and this new part of you all over again. And it's very hard. It's very hard making that transition. And that's something that a lot of them do not offer.
Exactly. That is definitely a point that is actually missing. And we've touched upon it earlier, Morgan, but have you felt that you were dismissed or discriminated against in the healthcare system, or even that there's this lack of humanism when it comes to treating your patients?
I definitely felt dismissed when I came to the neurologist, the neurosurgeon, with the first neurosurgeon with my seizures. And my mom, thankfully, was there for that appointment. She had recorded some of the seizures that I had and showed it to him. And he kind of slipped in there, oh, they're pseudo seizures. They're not real. So I don't know how to. I'm not an actress. I'm not that great of an actress. So I don't know how I would fake a seizure. But when I would read about it, know that if this illness can mimic a brain tumor, seizures aren't that far behind. They're not that far off.
Yeah.
And that's exactly. When I knew I had to go find a second opinion.
Mm-hmm. And so the next question kind of goes into, how can patients ensure that they receive better health care or make sure that they feel heard, respected, and understood?
It's, for me, it was extremely helpful having someone with me. It was helpful having my mom, where I appoint my daughter. I have a 20-year-old daughter. She went with me to an appointment. My mom went with me to an appointment. My sister's to the surgery, asking questions. I always made sure I had a notebook where I wrote everything down. If I read something online or researched it, I printed it, highlighted it. These are the questions that I have. It can be intimidating to stand up for yourself, especially with someone in the medical profession, because you could feel that you're not as smart as them. I'm not a doctor, I don't know. But you know yourself, you know your body, you know your spirit, you know that something's not right. But if you can, always have either someone with you, maybe record the conversation, which I've done before as well, to take as many notes as you can. Just make sure you have backup with you.
Yeah. 100%. I definitely agree with you. And I want to also add that nobody knows you as a patient or as a human being other than yourself. Absolutely. So never feel that if a professional is telling you something that you don't agree with, don't ever think that his word is the final say.
Absolutely.
So those are excellent tips that patients can use to feel empowered and ensure mm-hmm. that their healthcare priorities are communicated. So my next question for you, Morgan, is what can be done to improve the healthcare system? And this is a loaded question because there's so much that needs to be done. But in your opinion, if there's anything that can be done, what is it?
Accessibility. and everywhere. I know that I was able to receive the care I have because I have insurance and I have decent insurance. I've been without insurance before and or on welfare and their insurance provided, and I did not receive a fraction of the same care that I received with the current insurance I have now. And just having that accessibility to everyone, it's amazing to me how quickly you were put out the door because, well, this isn't covered, or this can't be paid for. So, or people who do not have insurance, they don't even get the help they need because they can't afford it. I've been in that boat too, where I just ignored how I felt because I couldn't afford it.
Yeah. That's really outrageous that we have these discrepancies and access is not given to everyone. And I've spoken to some patients or people that have been accessing healthcare, but they've had to choose between giving up things or being right. compromised and putting themselves in very difficult situations.
Right.
So mm-hmm. I definitely agree with you that access to healthcare is something that we need to work on and to create a system where health shouldn't be something that you need to be having second thoughts about just because you cannot afford it. And so, Morgan, for the last question that I have for you is, if there is anything or someone that is wanting to share their story and they're too afraid to come out and tell their story or speak up about their diagnosis or how they're feeling, what would you say to them?
Start with, groups have been very helpful for me. Like the forums on Facebook, there's thousands of groups that you can join. And it's, even if you don't get up there and ask a question, there's so many things answered within those small groups. And then you do form this kind of bond and it builds that confidence to ask questions. One of the groups that I'm in, For a while, I didn't really say anything. I would just read people's comments and their links to articles. And then I would get a couple of people who send me private messages of, this is the doctor that I saw, or you should contact this person, or someone on Instagram, her name is Kylie. She's the reason why I even got into Johns Hopkins because she referred me to her doctor. And always understand that there is someone out there who feels, if not exactly the same way you do, they're experiencing something similar. And you forming that bond or group with people will give you that confidence to, you know what, let me ask this question. Let me, you know, contact, and if not the doctor, the nurse, because I've worked with many nurse practitioners because I couldn't get in direct contact with the doctor. And they seem to be more open to your questions and comments. But look for those groups online. Start there, and sometimes they'll have like Zoom calls where you can just sit and listen. But definitely look for those forums. There's just a whole community out there of people that you'll be amazed, because even with my illness, I'm on the older side of it, because a lot of people in the groups that were diagnosed as children, and they've gone through, I think I saw someone said they're on their 30th surgery since they were a child. And it was like mind blowing. Here I am with two in a year, but that's the reality of what it is. So we kind of just talk to each other. Well, why do you have this? And why do you have that? And then those start sparking conversations. And then once you start having those conversations, that will give you that confidence to have a conversation with the professional you need to talk to.
Exactly, and you've beautifully highlighted the importance of speaking out and building a community, and that value cannot replace anything else. And if anything, you closely become a close-knit family that are there for each other. You can exchange information, ideas, attend groups, be that educational or just for community building. Morgan, that I just want to thank you so much for coming onto the Pyramid podcast, for sharing your insight, for sharing your views, for being so open, for highlighting the importance of patient voices. And I just want to say that when patients are truly engaged and advocate for their own health, their voices can be amplified to communicate healthcare priorities. The focus on patient advocacy is so important, not only in healthcare, but beyond and outside. And we shouldn't just focus on maximizing health and wellness, but also on preventing and treating disease, but by listening to patients' voices. So I hope that the Behind Diagnosis Patients special series sheds light on the importance of listening to patients, their voices, and that over time it will help change patient safety, healthcare innovation, and ensure better effective healthcare delivery. So with this, Morgan, thank you so much for coming onto the PureMed podcast. I really appreciate it, and I'm sending you warm hugs because it's never easy being a patient in the healthcare system, and let alone sharing your story. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Leah. I really appreciate it. This was great. Thank you.
I'd like to thank our sponsors, Hashtag Rising Youth, the Government of Canada, Canada Service Corps, and Taking It Global for supporting and funding the project. I'd also like to thank the incredible individuals, voices, and patients who appear on the series, and whose stories will guide medical education, clinical practice, and healthcare innovation. Listen in and listen now to the Behind Diagnoses Patient Special Series on the PureMed podcast to ensure change for a better world. Catch us on the next episode in conversation with another incredible patient advocate. And if you need more information, do not hesitate to email us at puremedfoundation@gmail.com. Thank you for tuning in. Stay safe. Stay healthy.